Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Famine is setting in. That is the latest assessment from the International Court of Justice about what's happening to Palestinians in Gaza as the Israeli military tries to crush Hamas there. The UN's top court ruled in a unanimous decision today that Israel must act without delay in getting aid into Gaza. Israel denies that it's blocking aid as a weapon of war.
And supporters of a ceasefire in Gaza turned up in New York City last night, chanting outside a glitzy fundraiser for President Biden as he spoke.
There was an insurrection.
Shame on you, Joe Biden! Shame on you!
Biden's relationship with Israel's prime minister has been testy of late. Let's talk about the Mideast and politics and money with our Friday Politics Roundtable. We're joined by Yasmin Abutaleb, White House reporter for The Washington Post. Yasmin, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And we have reporter Barak Ravid on the line. He's covering foreign policy and the 2024 election for Axios. Barak, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
So, Barak, first a quick update. Any movement on a ceasefire in Gaza or getting more aid to people who desperately need it?
Well, first, I think the ceasefire is connected to the hostage negotiations, and those are pretty deadlocked at the moment. There were talks until a few days ago in Qatar, but it ended without a real breakthrough. Just a few hours ago, the Israeli Prime Minister's office announced that an Israeli delegation of negotiators will go to Cairo in the next few days to try and, you know, break this logjam, but at least for now, it seems that the gap between Hamas and Israel on this hostage deal is pretty wide.
So to both of you, less than 6 months ago, Biden promised Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu unwavering support after the October 7 attack. Now, flash forward, Monday the U.S. did not veto a ceasefire resolution at the U.N., allowing it to pass. The reaction, swift. Netanyahu canceled a visit by top Israeli leaders to the U.S. Want to know how consequential this rift is. Yasmin, you first.
I think it's very consequential because there has been, quite a shift in the policy and the public posture in the last couple of months, especially, I think, as the domestic implications of Biden's support of Israel have become much clearer. A number of people I've spoken to have said you can almost sort of trace the shift in their rhetoric, you know, where they started talking a lot more about the suffering in Gaza and being more critical of Israel for not allowing more aid in and sort of allowing these conditions to happen on the ground in Gaza, to when they started really reckoning with the political ramifications in Michigan. And Biden sent a high-level delegation to meet with the Arab and Muslim community in Michigan. In terms of the UN Security Council resolution, it was very notable because they have vetoed the last several resolutions. But at the same time, John Kirby went out there and said, emphasized that this was a non-binding resolution, that this really didn't mark a change in their policy. So I think there's a little bit of confusion in what message they're trying to send by allowing the resolution to go through, but then coming out and seeming to sort of publicly undermine it.
And Barak, hey. Scott, go.
I want to ask Barak about that, your sense of the U.S. appearing to cross its longtime ally Israel at the U.N.
Well, I think first, it's true that 6 months ago, Biden expressed unprecedented support, but he expressed unprecedented support for Israel and not for Netanyahu. And I think this is why we are now where we are. Because over the last few months, I think especially in the last 2 months, there's been an understanding in the White House, that growing understanding that Netanyahu is making decisions on the war and on the policy that are more connected to his own political survival and not to Israel's national security interests. And I think that this is when this divergence started. And Biden's trying to, you know, play a very tricky game here of, on the one hand, breaking with Netanyahu, and on the other hand, sticking with Israel, which is, I'm not even sure that this thing is possible. But I think that when you look at the Security Council resolution, I think maybe this is, you know, one of the attempts to play that game. On the one hand, you know, give Netanyahu some sort of a, you know, slap with not vetoing this resolution, but on the other hand, going right afterwards and saying, you know, there's no change in our policy. We still connect any ceasefire to a hostage deal.
So, Yasmin, what about this tricky game, as Barak calls it, for the White House, right? So we know the Israeli government has uncanceled the visit. Now we'll be in D.C. to discuss plans to invade Rafah in southern Gaza. President Biden has increasingly been frustrated with Israel's approach, mounting civilian deaths. The U.S. has already crossed Israel at the U.N. So what options does the White House have now to exercise leverage in the Middle East?
Well, I think Barak explained it perfectly when he said Biden pledged unwavering support to Israel, but not to Netanyahu. And so they have been trying this very difficult game of not breaking with Israel and still expressing unwavering support with Israel as a country and its right to retaliate for October 7th, but breaking with Netanyahu because of the way he's pursued the war. And more than that, the way he has just publicly defied Biden and the White House over and over and over throughout this conflict. I mean, he has sort of voiced public disagreement on pretty much every major issue with the White House, despite the unprecedented support Biden has provided him. Though Biden has a number of options to exercise influence on Netanyahu and on Israel if he wants to. But we know from our reporting that he's been highly reluctant to exercise some of the considerable leverage the U.S. has. It could be, you know, the most sort of stark thing would be to suspend weapon sales to Israel. Mm-hmm. But even in between that, you could notify Congress of every weapon sale because that would slow it down and would make it subject to congressional approval and debate. We know a number of Democratic lawmakers are now voicing opposition or at least skepticism of sending so many arms to Israel, given the way the war is being prosecuted right now. Biden really has not been willing to take those steps yet. I think we have to wait and see whether he's willing to notify Congress of more of the weapons transfers, because so far he has circumvented Congress for more than 100 of them.
Mm-hmm. Barak, for now, Prime Minister Netanyahu appears to be standing firm. This week he told U.S. lawmakers that he has to move into Rafah and that a victory against Hamas, in his view, is weeks away, despite what American officials tell him.
Now we are told, you can't do this. If you go into Rafah, you're going to have a humanitarian catastrophe. You're going to have, 30,000 civilian dead. Okay. That's not true. That is simply not true.
Barak, despite mounting criticism from the U.S. and many other governments, do you expect Netanyahu and Israel to proceed and send troops into Rafah?
Listen, I don't know about you, but I guess that a lot of the people who are listening to us right now would agree with me when I say that Netanyahu is not, let's say, has a proven record of not being, let's say, the most credible politician on earth, okay? And, you know, we've seen it time and time and time again. So on Rafah, it's the same thing. The fact that Netanyahu says something doesn't mean this is what's going to happen. And you know how I know that? Because he issued, I think, four times already, public statements that he approved the plans for an operation in Rafah. I've never heard about a military operation that was approved so many times and still did not happen. And this is why I sort of disagree with Yasmin about the leverage that Biden has over Netanyahu and how he uses it. And I think that the Security Council resolution, in my opinion at least, is much more effective than arms sales when it comes to leverage over Israel. And I think that if you look at when did Netanyahu start talking about Rafah and what happened since then, I think it's a testament to the fact that Biden does have leverage and that the operation Rafah, at least for now, is not going anywhere.
Yasmin, let's talk about voters and leverage over Biden. On Sunday, Vice President Kamala Harris was asked about an Israeli move into Rafah by ABC's Rachel Scott.
Are you ruling out that there would be consequences from the United States?
I am ruling out nothing.
On Tuesday, President Biden was once again heckled by supporters of a ceasefire, this time in North Carolina, but he had a ready response.
They have a point. We need to get a lot more care into Gaza.
You've already mentioned Michigan, Yasmin. In this election year, is Biden losing voters in key states, key demographics, for his support of Israel?
If you look at the landscape right now, then you would say, yes, he is losing support among key parts of his base, at least when you look at polling, approval of his handling of the war and of his support of Israel. Obviously, there's the Arab and Muslim community, but beyond that, there's young voters, there's progressive voters, there's people of color. And it's still early where we don't know how many of these people will ultimately withhold their votes from Biden because of his handling of the war. But I did a story a few weeks ago, and I've done a couple since, about, there is this abandoned Biden movement in Michigan and a couple states. It's unclear how effective that's going to be. Obviously, the uncommitted votes that we saw in a number of these primaries, starting with Michigan. In Michigan, it got over 100,000 votes. In other states, you know, Washington State, the uncommitted movement got 2 delegates. So mm-hmm. This is not an insignificant movement. The campaign will say, well, a lot of these people have mm-hmm. said they're doing this to send a message, but have said they're going to support Biden in November because of the stakes of Biden versus Trump. But I think right now it's a bit unclear how many of these voters they can win back, how many of them where this will be a deciding issue where they really are willing to withhold their votes and you know, potentially allow a Trump presidency because of that. And what work Biden does between now and November to try to win some of these people back. I think the efforts so far have fallen short when you talk to these voters that it hasn't really marked a significant change in policy.
We've been talking to Yasmin Abutaleb, White House reporter for The Washington Post, as well as Barak Ravid, political reporter for Axios, covering foreign policy in the 2024 election. Thanks to you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.